Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Okay, today we're going to be discussing iPhone and Windows Phone 7 development very directly with the resident experts from Firefly Logic out of Nashville, Tennessee. They're at www.fireflylogic.com. I've got Brian Hunter, Chris McPherson, Daniel Norton, and you seem to indicate that the person who had probably the best comparative experience between the iPhone and Windows Phone 7 was Chris. So can you start us out by talking, do you see, are these two variants on a very similar theme, or are these radically different worlds in your opinion?
Well, it depends on how you approach it. I think if you have a background in a C-based language, you're certainly going to be way ahead of the game. If you've depending on which direction you're headed, you know, if you're going from the Microsoft side to the iPhone side, you know, having the language at least rooted in the same sort of syntax is going to be a huge benefit. But either way, you know, just like if you were going from C sharp to C++ or an older version of C, you're going to struggle with some of the, you know, figuring out where the concepts are. But once you get past that, you really are just, you know, it really just comes down to the pitfalls of the platform, which...
Well, let me push you on that for just a minute, on the language issue for just
sure.
a minute, which is when you go from C to C++, when you go from C to your first object-oriented language, my feeling is the analogy that I've used for a number of years is if you picture an Italian doctor in the 18th century, and you hand him two medical textbooks. One is in French, written in the 18th century. The other is in Italian, written in the 20th century. So the French one, he's got a little trouble with syntax and semantic, you know, and figuring out the translation. But everything that he translates is going to make sense to him. Whereas the one that's in Italian, that's in his own language, but it's talking gibberish as far as he can tell. It's talking a completely inverted mindset about disease. So taking that analogy, the 20th century medical language is the object-oriented C++, and the 17th century Italian is C. And so I guess what I'm trying to get at, if I haven't really crushed that analogy to death, is whether moving from Objective-C to C-sharp is on the order of moving from C to a object-oriented language, or it really is just a variation in some syntax.
And on Apple's side, you have leeches and bleeding and the humors.
Yeah, I would say most of these guys are going to definitely agree with you about Objective-C being a 17th century language. I don't know if I agree with that one, but I'll leave it at that.
Well, I would say I think you're hitting on the key thing, which is you're gonna, you know, if you're going from something like C, something that's procedural, to OO, that's an entirely separate challenge that you're gonna face. You know, you're gonna have to face that challenge. And if you wrap those up together, it's almost not a fair way to describe. You know, everyone's gonna struggle if you start like I did with C and then go to C++ and then on to something like Java or C#. Those are each pretty big leaps, and that they're quite different. And that really has nothing to do with moving from, you know, if you're a developer and you're already comfortable with at least the concepts of OO and you already sort of think OO, then you're going to have a much easier time moving across.
If you're an Objective-C programmer, do you think OO?
It depends. I think if you can definitely have that conversation. I mean, if you can sit with another developer from a different world and talk about OO concepts without constantly digging down into the syntax, I think you're there. You know, if you can talk about how you, because they're the same exact challenges, it really comes down to syntax. And then, you know, then you can talk about memory management and places where the platforms are different. But if you're not comfortable with those concepts, you know, those are big concepts on both sides of the pond, I guess. They're important to understand, and you're going to struggle with those either way. And that's the same for either platform. Where you put your semicolons and how you pull those things off is going to be different for each of them, but the concepts are basically the same.
Okay, so that's very good news for an iPhone developer looking to expand to Windows Phone 7, is that they're not facing a major paradigm shift. They are facing some syntactic questions, and some of the words are overloaded in the sense that, you know, interface means one thing in one language and another in the other, but really we're talking more syntax than overall semantics.
Right, and I don't want to downplay the syntax difference there. You're going to have a nice stiff learning curve, but I would say it's probably easier to go from the iPhone to Silverlight than the other way around, but not by much. I mean, you're going to face similar challenges, but I think it's you know, the Silverlight and C Sharp are, there's a few less sharp edges, I would say.
I would tend to agree with that. I mean, I would just guess, this is random guess, and I could be 100% wrong on this, but your average Objective-C developer has experience with other languages, so the syntactic difference, I mean, they've probably already experienced that if they played around with Java, or they've already played around with C-sharp once or twice before. So that transition from Objective-C to C-sharp, you know, I think the syntactic difference isn't terribly much. Whereas, you know, going from C-sharp or Java to Objective-C, there is this big syntax difference where you look at it and, whoa, that's a lot different.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
I'm trying to decide if Brian and Sean are just very polite, or I need to bring them in more.
We are. We're very polite people.
Okay. Fair enough. So then I guess my next challenging question is, assuming that you can get past the syntactic differences, and I'm absolutely convinced that you can, and that you're focusing on building out your application, the typical iPhone developer is thinking MVC. The typical WinPhone developer is, we hope, thinking MVVM. Now, I would argue that those are similar enough that that's a half a day conversation at most to get comfortable moving back and forth between those two. But what's your experience?
Brad, you want to take that?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think about whenever I'm approaching any platform is, you know, signal to noise or any new language. And I get a sense on Objective-C and what Dan is doing day to day is he's having to think a lot more about the plumbing than I have to think about generally when I'm over in managed C-sharp. The only place where that breaks down is, of course, the two things I mentioned earlier, and that's actually where I sort of have the problem, where I feel like too much of what's underneath leaks up into the day-to-day life, the programming life with the navigation and the tombstoning. But I think that's really the core problem right there is how much leaks up from underneath. How leaky is the abstraction? and
you don't mean leaky like memory leak, right? You mean leaky.
Well, I guess you have that as well. I remember you pulling out quite a bit of hair on early iPhone development with various memory leaks. The only thing you had going for you on some of those was, well, the app dies.
Right. But returning to your initial point, when you say that the model is leaky, can you expand on that just a bit?
Well, you know, if you're thinking about MVC or MVVM, you're really thinking about what the screens look like and what the interaction is from screen to screen, and you're thinking about some business value and making things delightful, and then all of a sudden you've got to deal with some infrastructure problem. And so, like, you've completely shifted from you've had to shift your point of view from delivering value to patching up things that are maybe not there in your framework. And so that's kind of what I mean there.
But if you're an MVC programmer, and I'll throw this out to all four of you, if you're an MVC programmer, you're used to thinking in terms of MVC, and along comes MVVM, what's your experience about how hard a mindset adjustment that is? Is that a pretty straightforward, oh, okay, this maps to this, or is the difference between a controller and a view model so substantial that it really changes everything about the way you approach it?
I don't think that would really throw anyone for a loop, really. I mean, it definitely wouldn't if you've had any experience with anything that had that binding. I mean, that's, of course, the real difference there, that you've got the communication happening through binding versus, you know, hey, do this. that seems like a much easier translation than even... I think hopping between the two, you might have even more problems with you know, switching between, figuring out what the Metro, what Metro expects of you. That sort of thing might actually be more of an issue than something along the difference between MVC and MVVM.
Right. And just to explain to the iPhone developers, who may not be as familiar with WinPhone 7, Metro is the standard way of displaying and creating a UI in Windows Phone 7.
Right, and it's just this beautiful. This is one of the things that that I believe where Phone 7 really knocks it out of the park was the amount of time spent on good design and building up Metro and building up this look and feel. And I think that's something that's been absent a lot of times on a Microsoft stack. That amount of work, that amount of help, these two gaps that have sort of been there a lot of times in different products have been the look and feel stuff, which, you know, companies from Apple to Oracle have done a better job with look and feel in the past. But here Microsoft comes in, and I think they really beat Apple at this, in my opinion. I don't know if Daniel might disagree, but I really love what they've done there, and it makes up for a lot.
I think the big thing I disagree with you on is Oracle doing a better job than Microsoft.
No, I'm not talking about design as in things looking sweet, but I'm talking about if you ever looked at the Oracle's BLAF. That was something I always wished that I would see from Microsoft, their browser look and feel. And it was this basically setting up the idioms of how an app will work. You know, instead of it's like it's a big cowboy fest where, you know, it's a total rodeo every time you open a project and you've got a new bunch of developers coming in. There's some interesting UIs that come out of that, but interesting is not always a positive thing.
Right. So let me provide just a little background very quickly. In Windows Phone 7, there are two platforms with which you can develop. One is Silverlight, and that's what we've been focused on and probably will stay focused on. The other is XNA. When you're in XNA, which is pretty much targeted at game developers, then all bets are off, and it's going to look like...
Yeah, you are in the rodeo then, and you might even have a rodeo game.
Exactly, and it can look like anything that you like. And the truth is, with Silverlight, you could make it look like anything you like, but you don't, because the platform and the tools make it extremely easy to stay within the Metro look and feel, even if you're not a designer. That's not to suggest that a designer isn't very important in your project, but a developer can put together an application that's reasonably consistent with Metro just by using the resources that are already in there from the templates in Visual Studio.
And definitely one of those key components of it is binding, and so binding your UI elements to a model and things like that. And so from that perspective, an iPhone developer, and if that's your experience, might have a bit of a confusion with that one. Whereas some of the more experienced iPhone developers are probably also Cocoa developers. And so a Cocoa developer that has experience with desktop apps is probably going to be fine with all of the binding stuff because they have some binding features. If they're familiar with key value observing, key value coding, then this idea of binding through Silverlight is going to be a little more familiar to them.
So let me just fill in a little bit about binding. Typically, when you're learning Silverlight, classic Silverlight for the web, you learn about binding well before you learn about MVVM. And the idea is that you take a view object, let's say a text box or a text block, and you say, let's take a text block, which is essentially a label, and you say the text for this is going to be bound to this property. So here's a text block. It's bound to first name. And I don't know what has a first name, but something is going to be given to me that has a first name. And then you bind each of the other controls. And that can be one way for display or two way, where if we're in a text box or something else the user can interact with, it can be written back to the original data. Just before you finish up, you say, here is the object, and this can be at runtime even, here is the object to which you're binding, and all that object has to do is have the properties you said to bind to. So if I hand you a customer object, then first name is going to be that customer's first name, and if I hand you a student object, obviously it'll be that, and you can imagine that there's a great deal of flexibility there. Building on top of that, we looked at the model view controller, And back when I was doing MVC for the Mac in 1990, the MVC, one of the big debates, and I think it's an ongoing debate, is how much is in the view and how much is in the controller. Martin Fowler came along and put together the concept of model view presenter, where the presenter owned a great deal of responsibility for what the view would do. And the idea was that the view was responsible only for the user interface. It turns out that as Silverlight's precursor, WPF, was being developed, MVVM was created out of MVP and developed alongside with it, each influencing the other. And then as Silverlight came along, all influencing one another. So MVVM is very tightly coupled to Silverlight and builds on that binding to say, okay, the way the view knows what to do is through binding, either because something changed in the object that has to be presented or even behaviors being bound. And the only other point that I would make here is we often talk about how the view has no code in it. And that's not so. The view has a tremendous amount of code. It's just all written by Microsoft and all tested by, well, you, actually, by the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of developers. So we know pretty much that when you put up a checkbox and click on it, you're going to get a tick in that checkbox, and that if you drop down a drop down, that's going to work, because that's all code that's been tested by Microsoft. But there's a lot of code there. The programmer-generated code, the logic of the application, however, is typically not in the view, but in the view model, which mediates between the view being responsible for presentation, and the model, which is the abstraction of the data. Fair enough?
I'd say in XAML, there's still a fair amount of code in on the XAML side that's not Microsoft code. I mean, if you look at the bindings, if you look at any of the stuff going on in there, it's hard to say, you know, what that is other than code. I mean, there's quite a bit going on in there that you can have runtime errors with. You can have, and it's not just straight data. I mean, these are things that, but other than that, I agree.
No, that's a very good point, that the binding itself, setting up the binding, if you're not getting that right, you know, or the object isn't there or it's null, you're going to run into runtime issues. But the application logic is typically not in the code behind file, which is where a lot of folks started out based on how things were done in WinForms and in ASP.NET.
Right. I think things have moved in the right direction along that, just by people adopting the pattern. The first thing I had sort of a part A and a part B of what I thought was really great with the phone. And one is Metro, and then others is this where these open source libraries come in to fill gaps that are there in the platform. But on these holes that are there on a lot of the Microsoft product has been on the one, this look and feel side, but then on the other, this convention over config. And you're seeing both of these come in Microsoft products, they leap around. You're seeing this great thing with Metro on the phone, and you're seeing on ASP.NET MVC, you're seeing this convention over config. This is one of the biggest problems I had when I moved to WPF. We started building production apps in WPF in 2007, summer of 2007. And we fought a lot of battles that before MVVM became this thing that everyone was talking about. And those are things I would really love to see rolled into the platform more, where it's not the thing you have to do, but it's there for if you'd like, in the same way that you can work outside of Metro if you want to, but it's there if you like.
So you'd like to see more intrinsic MVVM support inside the platform?
I think it's cost an incredible amount of money that something like my favorite, you know, MVVM Lite is out there, but my favorite would be Caliber Micro. But it just seems like a horrible shame that something like that wasn't thought of and baked in and with Visual Studio 2008 as a thing to use. And sort of the problems that were left undone there are sort of the biggest problems I have with the phone development. But then on top of it, the things that were so great about WPF that made it compelling to move to it are the things that make the phone great as well.
So. And before you guys get too far into Caliber Micro, I wanted to jump in as soon as that started getting mentioned.
Oh, right on.
Jesse's blog, one of his first blog posts, talked about here's all the tools you need to get, and he had links out to get to Visual Studio Express, or if you want to get the full version, all that stuff. And I think that is particularly helpful for Objective-C, or really like just non-Microsoft developers in general that are jumping over into Windows Phone development. Like, what are all the tools I need to find? You know, there's this kind of ramp-up thing. So one of the things I would appreciate, I guess, Jesse, is some of these other ancillary, you know, these other open source libraries and things like that, if there was somewhere where there was some type of, you know, listing out of these things. So here's Calibre and Micro, here's where you go get it, you know, kind of thing. So I don't have to kind of hunt all over the internet to find these things. It'd be a cool thing, just like, you know, if I were to say, hey, man, go to Jesse Liberty's site and here's the list of everything you need to get started.
You know, that's on my plan. It wasn't before you started speaking, but it is now.
Daniel, this is a question. This is kind of funny that I'm asking a question to you, but how about open source stuff on iPhone? I mean, does that community, are there things that you use? Is there a lot of person to person, or is that sort of shut down by Apple?
In a way, it is kind of shut down. The idea of having the traditional Cocoa sense of a library that you can pull into your app and use it doesn't work so hot inside the iPhone thing, but there are kind of ways around that, and so there are some tools that you can use. Like, for instance, you know, the apps that I've worked on, there's a pretty commonly used OAuth tool and a Twitter thing and a Facebook one, and there's one that's on the top of my head right now that I'm using right now that I lost. But anyway, there are Google Analytics. That's what it is. So there are bits of code that you can get, but my experience, and maybe this is different than other CocoaTouch developers' experience, is it certainly isn't as rich as the open source community wrapped around just about anything else, you know, C# or Java or Ruby.